from Rockwired Sound in Albuquerque, New Mexico, of all places. This is Rockwired Radio, exclusively at rockwired.com. On today's show, Rockwired presents the unearthly guitar sounds of Craig Marr, the stunning indie pop sound of Anna Modorsky, and the full-throttle metal assault of Cannibalus. Stick around for more. Rockwired Radio is a production of Rockwired Media, LLC, a limited liability company. Please stand by. Welcome to this edition of Rockwired Radio, exclusively at rockwired.com. I'm your host, Brian Lush, and the music is out there. I've got a great show for you today. A San Diego-based metal band by the name of Cannibalus is embarking on a tour of the Southwest. Their second stop will be right here in Albuquerque, New Mexico, at Burt's Tiki Lounge in support of their latest album, Man is the Enemy. I'm also pleased to feature singer-songwriter Anna Modorsky, who has re-released her CD, Talk is Cheap. It's more than a mere re-release, actually. It's more like a reimagining. But before we get to them, we're going to be giving it up for singer-songwriter and electrifying guitarist by the name of Craig Marr, who has just released his debut CD, Propel. I got a chance to get acquainted with the artist last week. We discussed his album and his evolution as a songwriter, and you'll hear all of that later. From his CD, Propel, here is Craig Marr with Living in Utopia. From the CD Propel, that was Craig Marr with Living in Utopia. Visit Craig at his official website, www.craigmarr.com. I had a chance to speak with Craig Marr about the making of his CD and his process as a songwriter. Here's how it went.
The album Propel sounds like it's been a labor of love for you. Is that the case?
Oh, yes. It's a huge love of mine. I put a lot of time and energy into writing the songs and creating the artwork and stuff for the album, for the Tactile album. But it's definitely been a passion of mine to make Propel, yes.
And now that it's out there for people to hear, how do you feel about the end result?
I feel like I made, you know, I hope I've made an impact on people that when they listen to the songs, they like the songs, and that, you know, I'm just trying to get a message, positive message out there to the world. And I think I'm getting good reactions from people, so that's good. It's a positive thing.
Have there been any, you know, reactions that have surprised you at all?
Yeah, I got some really good reviews that I thought I wasn't ready for, actually. I just did the album and I let it go, and you know, I let the music do the talking, and I was actually shocked at points, surprised about some of the reviews that I got. I was very impressed, actually, so put a smile on my face, you know, Brian?
I see. And talk about how music began for you.
Music was, you know, always, I think, you know, I've always been singing since I was a little kid, you know, since I was a little baby, just like humming and stuff like that, and I always loved music ever since I was a little kid, you know, I think it just was. It was a it's natural for me. You know, it was a natural road for me to take. I don't know what it was. The early songs, like you know, David Bowie and Alice Cooper songs and stuff like that, and Led Zeppelin and stuff like that. I just was automatically hooked to it, and that's it. It just drew me in, and there was no turning back.
I see.
And and early on, you know, I used to. You know, I had a really ragged acoustic guitar that my sister had left behind, you know, and, you know, I started playing around with that and stuff like that, and then, you know, I commend my mom for having such loud vocals, too. She's a real belter. She can really scream it out there, so a lot of times, you know, she'd be yelling at my brothers and me and stuff like that when we were kids, And I would emulate her screaming, and I'd scream back and make fun of her voice. But then, in a way, I was able to learn how to hit high notes. so I was like, you know, it was a lot of fun and stuff like that. But I was able to you know, learn on a junky guitar, and not like today, you know, all the kids, they want everything for nothing. I had to learn on a 5-string acoustic nylon strings, and, you know, I progressed from there. I took guitar lessons and stuff like that, folk guitar lessons, acoustic guitar lessons, and then my teacher, actually my first teacher, helped me to sing and play, like, not, you know, Neil Young songs and Simon and Garfunkel and Stones and stuff like that, and then I progressed into electric guitar, and then it's been a you know, a passion of mine too to continue to study music too. I'm always listening to stuff, and I got my ear on interesting things at all times and eclectic music, so I'm constantly growing in that sense, you know. So that's what I think Propel is. It's just a hodgepodge of all different styles put together, you know.
I see. And at what point did songwriting begin for you? I mean, after you picked up the guitar and, you know, learned to master it and learned to hit the high notes by competing with your mom yelling at you, I mean, when did songwriting begin?
Yeah, at first, you know, I couldn't really sing and play the guitar at the same time. So songwriting, you know, I mean, you know, I guess when I was around 15, 16 years old, you know, then everybody was so interested in playing other people's music, and so was I to a degree. But then, you know, there would be points where I'd be like, you know, look, I don't want to, you know, I would kind of emulate the people and the players. I would top their ideas, so to speak. I wouldn't really want to learn the things exactly note for note. And I would, if I played something, you know, like a Jethro Tull song or something like that, I would experiment and say, like, oh, okay, he's got the capo on the third fret, he's got it open tuned, and then I would say, oh, that's interesting, and I would automatically just start exploring, you know, and being creative about it instead of wanting to learn exactly what the other musicians were doing. I'd just get the feel of it, and then I would take it down my own road and develop my own things, and then that's what I really enjoy a lot, is creating, you know, crafting songs. And, you know, so, you know, after playing the guitar for a while, then I was able to start to adapt and start to put in the vocals. And then, you know, listening to Joni Mitchell and stuff like that, great singer-songwriter stuff, not just guitar stuff, but singer-songwriter stuff, then I started to mend the two. And just have fun and created stuff. Half of it was, you know, really horrible. But, you know, the other half was salvageable and it was workable. And so I just kept working on that and developing my style. And I, you know, eventually, you know, came to Propel after many years, where, again, I think, you know, I've created my own style. I'm not actually trying to sound like anybody, play like anybody. I'm just doing what I love to do, and that's write songs and make music.
And before the release of Propel, was there ever like a succession of bands for you, or was Propel pretty much it before?
Oh no, we, you know, I had hard rock bands, I had, you know, kind of heavy bands, I had bands that played in the, you know, in the park, you know, we all, you know, a bunch of hippies playing acoustic guitars and mandolins and stuff, and I played with a lot, you know, just, did many gigs with a lot of different kinds of people, blues gigs, you know, I've been around the block, you know, and it just took a long time, because everything has been done, it's taking a long time to really craft something out of the idols that I listen to, you know, like Bowie and Jeff Beck and Joni Mitchell and stuff like that. It took me a long time to craft my own sound, you know, from those players and stuff like that. But I had lots of groups and lots of bands that have been doing it for years, you know.
I see. And explain, if it can be explained, the creative process for you. How do you go about putting a song together? How does that work?
Usually I like the drums a lot. Sometimes it comes from just noodling around with the guitar and stuff like that, you know. But often maybe I hear a song that kind of inspires me, and then I don't know if it's stuck in my spirit or something like that, but I'm walking around maybe thinking about it subconsciously. And then a lot of times one method I have is, like, you know, start investigating and start noodling around and then find something that's striking. Maybe it's in my subconscious that it's been going around there for a while. And then I listen to a lot of drums, you know, I don't necessarily work with a drummer, but I have lots of drum beats, loops and stuff. And then I explore different kinds of drum loops. And then I find interesting drum loops that I've never heard before. And then I loop them on QuickTime or something on my computer or whatever. And then I play the guitar to it. And I have a synthesizer, a Roland synth. So then once I lay down the guitar tracks, then I add bass, keyboards, strings, sax, whatever. So that's usually how I do it. You know, I develop it from, I have to have the feeling, you know, it has to have that energy, and it has to have that emotional side to it. So the drums, I think, really are the key to, you know, propelling the sound and making, that's why rap, I think, is so popular, you know, because that beat is so, you know, infectious inside your body, you know, and that stuff goes back very primal, you know. So the rhythm, you know, the drums are very important to the crafting of the songs in the first stages of the songs, I think, you know, unless I want it to be a, you know, just an acoustic song or something like that with no drums in it or anything like that, you know, but the drums gotta rock, you know, and the drums gotta be.
Yeah.
And then a lot of times I pass, once I have that idea down, then I pass it on to a live drummer, and then we rehearse the song and go into the studio, so that's how it works.
Visit Craig Marr at his official website, www.craigmarr.com. From his CD Propel, here is Craig Marr once again with Summer.
I was
What songs off of Propel resonate for you the most and why?
That's a great question. Well, I like Living in the Utopia vocally. I like the rhythmic kind of rappy kind of, you know, in your face kind of thing, and it always reminds me of like walking down the street in New York City and stuff like that. So in that sense, vocally, I like the rap kind of feel to it. Where I Belong is a really cool. I think that resonates with me for the Arabic section that I put in there, because I played an oud, and then we overdubbed a loop, like Arabic drums and stuff like that, on top of the oud. And there's also electric guitar in there and stuff like that. But so that really stands out for me. When I hit that, I was really happy with that section. And you know, Summer, I think, you know, Summer has about maybe five or six different guitars. It's an open D tuning, and you know, I use slide guitar, I use volume guitar, I use a Nashville tuned guitar in that. So there's a lot of guitar, and of course the electric guitars for the solo and stuff like that. So I would think that those three songs and the feel of Summer too. I get the feeling that it's summer. You know, I like to, you know, when it's really beautiful outside, I listen. That's really what inspired me, you know, for the song. And I would say War of the Roses is the last track on the album. It's an open tuning too as well, drop D tuning, and that's kind of Joni Mitchell-ish, kind of, so to speak. So vocally, that last track I think really does it for me as well, because it showcases my vocals, you know.
What would you like someone to come away with after they've heard the album Propel?
Ah. Just looking forward. Just propelling in life. I mean, you know, that's how I came up with the title. It was, you know, we all need to just move and keep thinking about the things that we want to accomplish, keep thinking about the next goals we have in life, and, you know, I want them to feel the emotion and the vibrations of the vocal and the melodies and the music. You know, I want it to be a catalyst to put people in a good mood. You know, I just, even if some songs can be a little melancholy on the album or a little intense, whatever, it's still all about the positive vibrations that I'm trying to give off with Propel. And I think, you know, how can you think backwards with the term Propel, you know? So that's it.
No, you can't.
There was no choice once I came up with the title name. The question was how to make a cover for it. You know, that was the challenge. You know, I couldn't shoot a guy out of a cannon, you know, Propel. So I came up with the spaceship button idea. You know, you push the button and that's it, you take off.
Yeah.
The concept for the album cover.
Yeah, I think you said people were confused by the album cover.
I think, you know, sometimes, well, people said that, you know, it reminded them of Flipped Over, you know, Spaceship or something like that. But, you can make, you know, see what you want to see in it, you know. Just like the songs, you can, you know, I'll be talking about something and living in the utopia, but people could put it in their own context of their own lives and live out whatever they think I'm saying, and they could make up their own story out of what I'm saying, which I always did listening to albums. I'm sure, you know, I have yet to figure out, you know, what there was, you know, the whole story behind Kashmir, you know, but in my head, you know, Kashmir is one thing, you know, so.
Yeah.
But that's up to the artist. Only the artist knows that stuff, you know, but it's like a painting, you know. You can look at a painting and say, you know, what did Picasso mean by that, or Cezanne or Matisse or something like that, you know, I mean.
Let's see.
It's in the eye of the beholder. It's the same thing with the ears, you know, so.
What do you think is next for you musically?
I want to do, well, I'm working on a new record now. I have a couple new songs already set. I'm probably going to release a new single on iTunes and stuff like that, and on my website. But next is going to be a follow-up record to Propel. I do have some titles for it right now, but I don't want to let it slip because I might change the name. And then I'll have to listen to this interview and always remind myself that I said the wrong title of the album. And then I would like to do an acoustic album, actually, because I have that other side to myself. That's why the album is mixed with acoustic songs and electric. I want to do a just real bare bones, like two or three track, really live. Maybe I'll do it live, I don't know.
Visit Craig Marr at his official website, www.craigmarr.com. From his CD Propel, here is Craig Marr once again with Where I Belong.
I'm not afraid to die.
You're listening to Rockwired Radio exclusively at rockwired.com. I'm your host, Brian Lush, and we'll be back with music from Cannibalis and the lovely Anna Modorsky after these teeny tiny little messages. This is Rockwired Radio, exclusively at rockwired.com. Musical aptitude since 2005. Welcome back to Rockwired Radio, exclusively at rockwired.com. I'm your host, Brian Lush, and we just got done showcasing the music of singer, songwriter, and guitarist Craig Marr. Now we're moving on to singer-songwriter Anna Modorsky. I first became acquainted with her late last year when she released her CD Incantation, but before the release of that CD, she released the CD Talk is Cheap under the name Roos. Now, Anna Modorsky is re-releasing the CD Talk is Cheap with new arrangements and new recordings of her brilliant songs. I got a chance to speak to Anna once again regarding the re-release and her approach to songwriting, but we're going to get to that in just a few minutes. Here is Anna Modorsky with the title track of her CD, Talk is Cheap.
Shut tight.
That was Anna Modorsky with the title track of her CD, Talk is Cheap. Visit Anna Modorsky at myspace.com/AnnaModorsky. I had a chance to speak with Anna about the album a few days ago. Here's how it went.
Well, Talk is Cheap is a re-release, and I think when you released it before, you released the album under a different name, right?
Yes. I had my little moniker, Rouse, and then I just gave that up and said, you know, I'm just me. I'm just going to keep my name.
Why? I mean, initially, why did you feel like it was important to release it under a name, the other name?
You know, that's a good question, and I think it has more to do with my mental process of did I want it to come across as more of a band, or did I want to come across as more of a singer-songwriter? And I think maybe I just shied away from the fact that I was a singer-songwriter, because I find, categorically speaking, I get nervous of getting lumped into that, but I've kind of embraced it, and I'm okay with it now.
Okay. What do you think compelled you to re-release the album? You know, I mean, Incantation, you know, hasn't been out for a year yet, and why now?
Because first of all, I'm just a person with a sense of urgency in general. So, when I finished Incantation, I had already been having my doubts about Talk is Cheap, the original version, and how I felt about it. So then when I did Incantation, it kind of set a bar, and you know, the more you work at your craft, the more you have higher expectations for the sound and everything, and I just felt it didn't live up to its vision. So I, you know, retracted some stuff, I added some stuff, took away some stuff, changed the song order, you know, and now it feels like it's complete. So
a completely realized Anna Modorsky release, in other words.
Right, exactly. It feels like the album Talk is Cheap. I feel like I've done it justice, so I feel much better about it.
I see. And if I may say so, the cover is pretty eye-catching. Well, who's the artist?
The graphic designer and CD, you know, layout gal is Alana Lindner, and she's amazing. She did Incantation as well in terms of the layout. I had kind of an idea that I gave her, and she said, you know, I'm going to challenge you. I have an idea that I think trumps yours, and it did, and I totally conceded. So that's the direction we went, and we took, you know, she had this great idea of, she goes, I want to incorporate images that are from the lyrics, that are evocative of the lyrics, because you have such visual imagery and lyrics that I want somebody to like be listening to it, catching words, and want to look at the cover and find that symbolism, since evidently I write very symbolically.
And talk about how music began for you as an individual. How did that begin?
How did it begin? Well, I mean, it's hard to know where it ends and begins. I mean, I think it began young, and I didn't realize how much of an obsession it was, and in a real conscious way of saying, okay, this is how I identify myself, until I was a teenager. But I mean, it began in more natural ways of, I was, you know, grew up listening to my mom singing lullabies, or classical music, or music on the radio, or you know, my dad was a professional classical guitarist, my brother is a piano conservatory, I took classical piano lessons as a kid. So it was something that was part of my life. It was just never an identity that I embraced for myself. That's an entire backstory we can go into when we have more time. But it wasn't something that I felt comfortable embracing until I was a teenager, and when I wrote my first song, and it just kind of hit me like lightning that I knew it was my calling. And it wasn't an easy thing to accept that for myself, but it superseded everything else. So
I remember when I interviewed you for Incantation, you talked about how each song was a character. Do you think that's the same with Talk is Cheap?
No, I don't. Talk is Cheap is more of a breakup album. That was like there's several layers to it. Incantation was one step removed. It was more of a, you know, exploration I had in my observations, where Talk is Cheap is a lot more personal of an album, I think. Even though music is personal in general, these are more, it's more of a narrative of dealing with something and how, and I think in a way it was basically dealing with emotions that after a breakup or after a situation where you realize that you'd muzzled yourself for a long time and then finally realizing, wow, I really need to kind of digest this now. And it came out fast and furiously in a cycle of songs. That was that.
I'm kind of asking you to go back in time with this next question, just because, you know, Talk is Cheap initially was released before Incantation. How did you go about writing the songs for this, for Talk is Cheap?
I picked up a guitar and keyboard and started playing. It was really that simple. I remember, actually, I have a clear memory of the first notes that happened, and it was the song Talk is Cheap, and I had that little guitar. Like, I was just in this moment where I was just sitting there, and it was just one of those moments in life where you're like, what decisions in my life have brought me to this point right here? You know, just those, like, those self-reckonings where you're like, how the heck did I create this mess? Because clearly I have to take ownership for this mess I've now found myself in. And I picked up the guitar, and it just, my hands went to those chords, and those first couple lines came out on the song Talk is Cheap, and then it was just, you know, weeks of just, you know, head in my instruments and lyrics, and it just all came out.
I see. And what songs from the re-release, you know, stand out for you the most personally, and why?
The most personally? Well, that depends, I think, on what mood you get me in is what's most personal. I would say the song Evidence of Me really has that, within the cycle of writing the song, that Evidence of Me was the first song that I kind of had any sense of peace about the situation, where it wasn't just anger or frustration or all those, you know, more difficult emotions. It was just this kind of sense of calmness, kind of eye of the storm sort of thing. And it just reminded me that regardless of what lack of external evidence of me or what I'm trying to do or what I'm trying to accomplish in life or in a relationship, even though certain things may fall apart, that does not erase my worth or my value or what it is, my potential of what I can contribute. And I think in life we're taught a lot that if there isn't some sort of external manifestation, if there isn't some sort of success or applause or a relationship or a ring on your finger or children or a house or whatever it is, then you're, you know, you lack value. And sometimes you just kind of got to erase that and realize, okay, I am this person that has this worth and that has this value. That's good enough.
Visit Anna at her official MySpace page, myspace.com/AnnaMadorsky. From her CD Talk is Cheap, here is Anna once again with Evidence of Me.
I can stay here all day where there's no evidence of me. Not run all around. Seen half the town. I can go to sleep at night with no evidence of me. With no evidence of me. With no evidence of me. With no evidence of me.
With no evidence of me.
maybe for about a year since I've known you, I mean, you've been, you know, you've been taking requests from your fans and doing cover songs. Talk about that a little more. When did you start doing that?
Well, I started doing that, I think, some point last year, maybe. But, I mean, as in terms of interpreting songs, I've been doing that since the beginning of time of music. Like, I've, you know, various shows or when I'd have weekly gigs or this and that, like, doing covers is just something that that I do. I love music, so I love interpreting things, and it really, to me, taking it a step further from just saying, oh, I like this song, or I want to cover this song because I could make it interesting, or it moves me, or it doesn't move me, and I want to cover it, whatever the case may be. It's different when on the YouTube thing I do is that it's other people requesting it specifically. So it's like a song that maybe that I wouldn't necessarily think to cover, and it just forces you to see a song in a different way, or it forces you to it kind of pushes me in a way that I wouldn't necessarily think to push myself, because obviously somebody else's brain is, you know, introducing that input, and it's a really cool challenge. So I love anything that challenges me, because I'm competitive like that.
do you think it ever, you know, sort of, you know, helps your own in your own songwriting at all, working with someone else's work?
Yes, I think so. I think it's like anything. Like, I think it's like any skill that anyone has. If you know, like when an athlete does cross training, I kind of see it as cross training, you know, because you're developing a certain skill and you're pushing yourself as much as you can, but when you're forced to flex that muscle in a different way, it kind of creates another pattern of thinking, and it kind of gets you out of your comfort zone, which is always a good thing in anyone developing any sort of craft, whether it's mental or physical or both.
I see. And I read somewhere that you're putting a band together and going to start doing some shows. How's that coming along?
Good. I have, you know, working with a drummer who's amazing, and I am in the process of solidifying a guitarist, and I kind of want to have a sweeping sound, so I'm trying to put the right group of people together to do a live translation, and I want to keep it as small as possible. I'm trying to get away with making it a trio, so we'll see how that works out.
Okay, and what would you like someone to come away with after they've heard this album, Talk Is Cheap?
Well, I mean, I don't have any specific hope or expectation as far as what they come away with. I think that for me, my takeaway from this album after I finished listened to the final product was, I think it's just allowing yourself to explore darker, I don't know, emotions that you may not have, and it's a very, you know, it's a very present, I don't know how to explain it, but the energy of it is a very present thing, and it's very, there's a lot of anger, and it's more of a band, and it's driving, and it's got that whole thing going, and I think it's just a way to give yourself permission to feel whatever you feel and say what you need to say, and the whole, you know, the whole idea that the title Talk Is Cheap is somewhat of an irony, because there's plenty of references throughout the album of communication and a lack of communication, and how destructive and violent lack of communication is, and that's clearly evident, you know, in our world and politically, and as I was writing the album, the other layers of the album besides just a breakup album is a reflection on kind of the state of the world, because, you know, the macro is as micro, so I was looking at the demise of my own relationship and how lack of communication and all these things kind of created that, and it's the same thing happens in warring cultures and, you know, Christians versus non-Christians. I just recently watched Lord Save Us From Your Followers, which was done by an evangelical Christian a documentary on the culture wars and how, you know, are we becoming a secularized country or not, and what's going on, and how everyone is on the defense and everyone is constantly putting little quips and sound bites to show their big, you know, their big stripes of who I am. I'm a liberal, I'm a this, I'm a that, I'm an atheist, I'm, you know, and it becomes ridiculous because everyone becomes just like a bumper sticker or a fish on a car. You know, it's the Darwin fish eating the true fish. And it just becomes this, like, how I call it, I just kind of, it's like an arms race of thought and bullshit, honestly, because it's not two people sitting down and talking, it's two people saying, having these really just blanket statement words of I'm this and you're this and that's that, and that gets you nowhere. Whereas when you actually sit two people down in a room and hash it out and talk it out, you end up finding a middle ground. So as I was watching that a few days ago, I'm like, yeah, that was pretty much kind of what my album was trying to say, is that, yeah, you have to walk the walk, but communication is important, and following through with the words you're saying is absolutely devastatingly important in if we're to coexist in our relationships and as a society.
Is this documentary on YouTube at all, or is it just come out, or?
Netflix.
Netflix?
It's the most brilliant thing ever. You can watch it instantly on Netflix. It was really nice for me to see that. I consider myself someone without belief in either way. You know, I'm not convinced either way because I'm an evidence-based person, hence titles like Evidence of Me. And it's nice for me to see people of all, you know, whatever label you put yourself on. Ultimately, it's more important what you're, how you treat each other and how we treat each other, right, rather than, you know, it's more important to get along than to be right. I think that's the point. And I'm not it's not instructive, you know, it's not a how-to, it's music. It's this is my expression of my thoughts and my perspective and my feelings and my passion. And if it moves you, fantastic. That's the aim, is to get it for make you think something or feel something. It's, you know, if it creates an impact, then I've done my job.
And what do you think is next for you musically? In terms of musical direction, you know?
Well, I've already written the next album, and I'm already starting to do research on where I want to go in studio. So I'm a really prolific writer, so that's something that, yes, I have written the next record. Tentatively, it's either going to be called Love in Spades or Triumph in Symphony. I'm not sure which. And it's the most optimistic thing I've ever written, and I'm really happy about it because I know it's really reflected a change in my own mindset. I think Incantation was dark, and it was that was the point. It was exploring really dark thoughts and kind of existential crises of, you know, lack of meaning and lack of feeling of belonging. And I think optimism and hope and feeling belonging is a choice in some way. And I think that was part of my learning curve my process of learning curve as a person after Incantation. Because after I wrote Incantation, I'm like, where do I go from? Because records are very much chronicle where I'm at. You know, you can tell where I'm at based on what I'm writing. I cannot lie in that way. And the next record has definitely shown this much more, you know, hopeful, optimistic side. And optimism has been a very difficult thing for me to learn as a person, honestly. And it's, I feel like I've nailed it, and it's great.
Visit Anna Majorski at myspace.com/AnnaMajorski. From her CD Talk Is Cheap, here is Anna once again with Marking Time.
Until you're done with all your crying, this liquid umbrella is your eye. You carry the sadness through each dark step, and in my due process mark your time.
You're listening to Rockwired Radio, exclusively at rockwired.com. I'm your host, Brian Lush, and we'll be back with the hard-driving sound of Cannibalist after these teeny, tiny little messages. Rockwired Radio, exclusively at rockwired.com. Musical aptitude since 2005. Welcome back to Rockwired Radio, exclusively at rockwired.com. I'm your host, Brian Lush, and we've just begun our final segment on today's show. Just because it's the last thing on the agenda, don't make it any less important. As a matter of fact, I couldn't think of a better way to kick off a three-day weekend than with the San Diego-based metal band Cannibalus. This week, the band kicks off their tour of the Southwest in support of their latest release, Man is the Enemy. The second date of this tour happens today. The band will be playing at Burt's Tiki Lounge in Albuquerque at 11 this evening. This show is free and is 21 and over. For more information, go to rockwire.com. I had a chance to speak with Mike and John Russo of Cannibalus about the tour and the new album, and you'll get to hear all that in just a few minutes. From the CD Man is the Enemy, here is Cannibalus with Comatose.
Tear your life into pieces, come on, come on.
From the CD Man is the Enemy, that was Cannibalist with Comatose. Visit the band at their official website, www.cannibalist.com. And if you're in the Albuquerque area this evening, check out the band at Bert's Tiki Lounge. They will be on the second stop of their tour of the Southwest, and the evening is going to be a blast. For more information on the show and the venue, just look on rockwire.com. I got a chance to speak with brothers Mike and John Russo of Cannibalist over the phone. Here's how it went.
Talk about this tour you guys are about to go on. Sounds exciting.
Yes, it is. We have a brand new album out called Man is the Enemy. We're heading out on our third Southwest tour. We're going to be going across Arizona, New Mexico, and Texas. We got about 13 shows lined up over 16 nights. Should be a good time.
I see. And what kind of road dogs are you guys? I mean, have you guys toured much in the extensively in the States, or is it, you know...
Well, last year was really the first year that we started stepping up and hitting the road. You know, we got our van and trailer and all that. And so far we pulled off two Southwest tours and one West Coast tour all the way up through Washington, Idaho, Oregon. So, you know, we haven't done any national touring yet, but we've done several regional tours on the West Coast.
And how do you guys like the Southwest, I mean?
Well, the Southwest is... We kind of consider it our home right now. You know, Texas is great. There's a lot of great cities out there that support hard rock and metal music. A lot of places more so than even in San Diego. So we love Texas. Arizona and New Mexico have been great too. So we love hitting the road out there.
Got a show coming up at Bert's Tiki Lounge on Friday.
Yep.
Talk about it. Have you ever played Bert's before?
Yes, we played Bert's once, and we played next door at the Atomic Cantina once too.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, we're playing Friday, May 28th at Bert's Tiki Lounge. It's a free show. We're playing with locals, The Ground Beneath. Those guys tear it up, too. So it should be a great night.
Well, Man is the Enemy. I mean, from what I've heard, it sounds great, you guys. Good work.
Well, thank you. You know, we have a very independent spirit in this band. We like to do a lot of things on our own. So we recorded it, we wrote it, we produced it, we mixed it all within the band. So we worked our asses off, but we're very proud of how it came out, and we're looking forward to getting out on the road and playing the tunes live.
I see. And just for a little history here, talk about how the band began. I mean, I looked at your guys' page, and you guys have been around a while.
Yeah, to tell you the truth, I'm not even one of the founding members. Me and my brother joined about 6 years ago.
Oh.
The band had been around for even several years before that. The only two guys left that are founding members are one of our guitarists, Samson, and our bassist, Chenzo. They started it way back in, like, 98. They dropped an album called Wicked Necessary, went through a bunch of different lineup changes, picked up me and John, but we still had a different singer. We put out an album called Demon Angel with that singer, then things turned sour, went through, like, a year and a half of auditioning, found Johan in 2006, and then since then we've been working our butts off.
Sounds like a roller coaster.
Yeah, it's been crazy, but you know, I think with the addition of Johan, I think we finally found the lineup. We've put out three albums since 06 with him, Liberation of Dissonance, Psychothermia, and now Man is the Enemy. So, you know, we've kind of been writing our asses off, and we're starting to tour, and you know, things are progressing well with the current lineup.
And what do you think is different this time around with this album from the previous release?
Well, I would say that LOD, Liberation of Dissonance, we had already written most of the songs when Johan joined the band. You know, the lyrics obviously weren't written, but the instruments were all there, and so that was kind of like, it wasn't very collaborative in the sense of working with Johan. And Psychothermia it's really solid, but it was kind of like an aftershock of LOD, and it's more of an EP, it's only 7 tracks. So in my opinion, Man is the Enemy is the first album where it's like, it's fully collaborative, we got all the guys in the band lined up. We had a year and a half to, you know, write a full-length album, 11 tracks. So it's like, it really feels like our most complete project to date.
I see. And talk about how the songwriting process works within this current lineup.
Well, I mean, it fluctuates. But in general, it usually starts out with either Sam or John, you know, writing some guitar riffs, coming up with some one or two riffs that work well together. Then the next step is often to come to me, the drummer, and you know, we'll lay down some beats, come up with a rough format. Once we have like a rough format and a few riffs that work well together, then we'll kind of bring it to the whole band, and everybody puts in their 2 cents. We give it to Johan, he does his lyrics and melodies, and so I mean, we try to be collaborative, but you know, it's not the same every time. Every song kind of has its own, you know, its own way that it comes out.
talk about the members of the band and what it is you think each of them brings to the table that makes it work. This incarnation, anyway.
Like I said before, we try to remain a very independent band, a very self-sufficient. So we've kind of, each of the members within the band have found their own little niche, you know. John, he's our Pro Tools guy. He's our recording engineer. You know, he mixes the albums. I handle most of our website design, and I do a lot of our booking. Samson is now stepping up and doing a lot of video work and photography and things along those lines. Johan and Chenzo are really personable, and they're really good getting out on the scene and talking to people. So I think we kind of, you know, each of us in the band has, we take advantage of our individual skills to help the band.
I see. And what songs off of the current album resonate for you the most, and why?
Well, the very last track on Man is the Enemy, it's called Earth ADD. That's probably my favorite track on the album for a few reasons. One is the subject matter. I really like what it's about, just kind of the destruction of nature and the destruction of the world, and it's all people's fault. But also the fact that the intro riff to that song is something that me and my brother wrote probably over a decade ago. It's actually a really old riff that we wrote from, you know, back when we were just kids jamming together, and you know, we made it onto that song, so that song kind of means a lot to me for that.
Talk about how music began for you. How did that start?
Well, I was kind of a pain in the ass when I was a kid. You know, I'd throw tantrums, I'd kick my door, I'd break shit. I'd throw shit at John. So, I mean, it was actually my mom's idea to get me a drum set. I think I picked up an acoustic guitar, but it just never really felt right to me. I knew it wasn't for me. But then when I got behind a drum set, and you know, I'd get pissed off, and I'd go up into my room, and I would just hit the cymbals and beat the hell out of the drums, and it just kind of felt natural. And with John playing guitar and being my brother, it kind of worked out, so we got to jam together a lot. And so, I mean, that's kind of how it all started for me. And you know, Cannibus was actually the first real band that we joined up with.
Wow. So there wasn't, like, a whole history of bands before Cannibus.
No, I mean, me and John, we tried to get our own project going. We auditioned bassists and different vocalists, but we just, you know, we did that for probably a couple years, but we never found a full lineup that we were happy with. So we never even got to the point where we were jamming shows at clubs or anything like that.
Is there, like, an age difference in the band at all? Or
it's something that we feel adds a lot to our sound, is that we actually have a pretty big age divide. You know, Samson and Chenzo are in their late 30s. Johan and John are like late 20s, early 30s, and I'm mid 20s. So it's like we have a pretty wide array age group going. So that you know, changes who our influences are and which styles we like. And so, you know, the fact that we have, you know, people of different ethnicities and different ages all clumped together kind of gives our sound a really, you know, a eclectic feel. It's like it's got a lot of different influences going on.
I see. And so, I mean, I mean, is this current lineup, you know, a stable one, you think, or?
Yeah, I think so. You know, we've had it for going on 4 years now, and, you know, we don't have any plans on changing it. We've been through a lot together at this point, so, if we haven't broken up yet, I don't see why we would now.
And what would you like someone to come away with after they've heard Man is the Enemy?
I don't know. That's a good question. I would like them to think that, you know, it was a great badass album. That, you know, that there's something for everybody. You know, if you're into the heavy thrash metal, you know, we got some of that thrown in there. And if you're into the soft funk rock, you know, we got a little of that thrown in there. So I'd like somebody to come away saying that, you know, that's a really, it's metal, but it's musical. You know, there's a lot of different elements, and there's a lot to appreciate, I think.
Visit the band at their official website, www.cannibalist.com. And if you're in the Albuquerque area this evening, check out the band at Bert's Tiki Lounge. They will be on the second stop of their tour of the Southwest, and the evening is going to be a blast. For more information on the show and the venue, just look on rockwired.com. Here is the title track of the band's previous release, Psychothermia. We'll be right back.
Looking back on burning bridges made. Backbone to the ground to solve. Not my problem, not my fault. I'm coming like a hurricane. Gonna hit you like a freight train. You gonna kneel to the problems that are facing you. Try to run when you come alive. You've been down this road before, so why you trying to lie? It's gonna hang you like a velvet noose straight down from the sky.
Since you and your brother joined this band, what has been the biggest surprise for you? What didn't you expect?
I have to say, joining the band was actually really my first experience in the local music scene, and I definitely did not expect. I had no idea what I was getting myself into when I joined this band. I didn't realize how hard it would be. I guess from seeing the movies and just from hearing people talking, I kind of expected, like, hey, you have some good stuff, you'll be playing at a club, it'll be packed, it's that easy. But boy, did I learn the hard way that you got to work your ass off, and I can't believe how hard it's been to get to where we are even now, and we still got so much work to do, and if anything, it's only getting harder and harder as we move along.
I'm sorry about that. I should have let you finish.
That's probably the thing that caught me off guard the most.
I see. And what sort of sound is typified by the music scene in San Diego? What kind of scene are you guys surrounded by?
It's definitely very tough for the metal scene. Being real close to the beach, you hear kind of a lot of the, like, acoustic rock stuff is really popular, like Sublime. And we both went to college at UCSD, which is, like, right on the coast, and everybody seemed to be listening to, like, bands like Sublime, Jack Johnson, and Dave Matthews. Like, I don't think there's ever a single metal band that rolled through our school in the 7 years cumulative between the two of us that went there. So metal definitely kind of takes a back seat to that. Reggae seems to be really popular, especially in some areas. There's a big scene for that. So we found we've definitely had more success out in, like, the Southwest, and we expect to hopefully hit the Midwest this time, but it's just based on what we've seen online from our promoting and people hitting us up, it seems like that would be a much better area for us too.
Yeah, I used to live in I lived in California for about 7 years.
Okay,
and what about? And so I do know what you mean. It's not, California is not as rock and roll as I thought it would be.
No, certainly not as much as it used to be.
Yeah, and that was always disappointing. I mean, strangely enough, that's where I started Rockwired, so.
Oh, yeah.
And talk about how you and your brother got into music. How did that happen?
I started guitar when I was 12. My dad had an old, like, Martin acoustic guitar lying around, just started strumming some chords on it. And they immediately got me a teacher, and fortunately I came across a very good instructor who, unlike a lot of teachers, actually taught me really cool stuff right off the bat. Like, my first song was an Eric Clapton song. They started teaching me Led Zeppelin, or pretty much if I heard a song on the radio I liked, he was able to pick it up, learn it real quick, and teach it to me. So right off the bat I loved playing guitar. It was just really cool to be able to play these songs I'm listening to on CDs. And then Mike started doing the drums just pretty soon after I started doing guitar, and then we kind of just jammed with each other. I played in, like, jazz bands in junior high and high school, and kind of did guitar classes there, and always got to kind of do some lead stuff, so I just always enjoyed it. It wasn't really until I took a summer job at Merrill Lynch while I was in college my junior year, and I realized how much I hated that business, that made me want to do music as a career. Kind of always expected I'd be getting into some kind of business job or something like that. But it's kind of seeing how unrewarding and how miserable it was just sitting behind a desk, you know, trying to make lots of money for other people. That was just like, this isn't for me. There's no creativity involved in it. That's really what I loved about music, was just getting to be creative.
And, with this being your first band, and also given the age difference of some of the other band members, especially maybe the founding members, I don't know, how intimidating was that, if at all?
It definitely was. When we first started auditioning for them, me and Mike were like, man, we really need to be on top of our game, and it really pushed us, and we realized, like, I thought I was a lot better than I was at the time, and that kind of set me straight, and getting out on the scene and seeing other, you know, at least technically I wasn't as skilled as a lot of these people out there. And so both me and Mike really improved our playing since then. So that really, being intimidated by them kind of helped, we stepped up to the challenge, and it kind of really helped make us better musicians. And so that worked out actually pretty well, and luckily we didn't let it intimidate us too much and stop us from trying. And luckily, Sam and Shenzo both, I mean, they were definitely very very skeptical of us, but fortunately they gave us a fair shot, and we ended up impressing them, I guess.
How anxious are you to get on the road for this latest tour?
I'm looking forward to it. We always have a good time, especially to the Southwest. The last few times we've done it have been a lot of fun, really great response. So I'm very excited to get out there with the new album. I really hope we get, I hope the feedback for the new songs, most of these people have never heard them, certainly never heard them live anyways. So I'm looking forward to getting the response to that, and hopefully it's a positive one. But we usually walk away from the Southwest tours feeling very, very encouraged, and that kind of drives us to keep pushing on.
And talk about your show coming up at Bert's Tiki Lounge here in Albuquerque.
Yeah, the first time, that was, I guess, the second show of our touring careers was at Bert's Tiki Lounge. And we had a great night. The place was packed. It's a bit of a small stage for us, which makes it a little challenging because we like to move around a lot, and we are a five-piece, but we always make do. And the crowd was really great, so we're looking forward to getting back there. We know we've got a lot of fans now and a lot of friends out there, actually, too, now, who are going to be out there. So it should be a really great night. We're playing at, I believe, 11 o'clock or so, but it's a free show. And so come out anytime. We're playing with some other great local bands, one in particular called The Ground Beneath, who we played with our first show out there. So it'll be a great time.
I see. And with all the work that has gone into making this latest album, how do you feel about the finished work?
I feel good about it. There was a time when it seemed like we were starting to get rushed, and because we set ourselves a deadline, and I was like, man, I was afraid that we might have to start sacrificing, like, either quality or number of songs. But in the end, it did seem to come together, and, you know, we stepped up when we had to, and we got it done. And I'm like, as far as the production, like Mike said, I've recorded our last four albums, the last three with Johan and the previous one with the previous singer. And like, definitely seeing myself improve over the last four albums, I think I've reached a point now, my recording ability is where I feel like I'm putting out absolutely professional work, just like what you could get in a real big studio for, you know, an absurd amount of money. So that side I was very, very happy with. I think the songs are phenomenal. Johan managed to come up with a bunch of both strong hooks as in catchy, but still maintaining a very powerful feel that I don't think it comes off as cheesy at all in any sense, which is something we always like to avoid. We don't want to be one of those cheesy hooky bands at all. So I'm very happy with that. I'm very happy with the music. It's a mixture of both heavy and melodic, so it's maybe not quite as heavy as some of the metalheads would really like us to be, but there's some of that in there. And I think when we still play live, the energy comes off and we look like a metal band live.
And what do you think is next for the band musically after this?
Geez, I'm looking forward to starting to write again. I haven't really dabbled in it much, but as soon as the album was done, I was like, I'm going to celebrate by going in and starting to write the next album, because that's one of my favorite parts of it. But it's really, I don't know, this album had so many different songs on it that kind of are so different from each other. You really never know where it's going to go, and I really have no idea what the next album is going to sound like, especially because me, Sam, and Chenzo all kind of seem to write very differently in very different styles. So I really have no idea where the next album is going to go.
Visit Cannabliss at their official website, www.cannabliss.com. And if you're in the Albuquerque area this evening, check out the band at Bert's Tiki Lounge. They will be on the second stop of their tour of the Southwest, and the evening is going to be a blast. For more information on the show and the venue, just look on rockwired.com. From their CD, Man is the Enemy, here is Cannabliss once again with Hit the Floor.
It's a lie, a fucking trapeze. It's not-
That's going to wrap it up for another edition of Rockwired Radio. Special thanks go out to Chip Schutzman and Clint Kaminska of Miles High Productions, Craig Marr, Anna Madorsky, and Mike and John Russo of Cannibalis. Thank you all for making today's show possible. For Rockwired Radio and Rockwired.com, I'm Brian Lush, and remember, keep your eyes forward, never look back, and make it up as you go. Rockwired Radio is a production of Rockwired Media, LLC, a limited liability company, and is available exclusively at rockwired.com.